There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to Time Out. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space, activist on the Gender Division of Labor, attorney, and family mediator.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Narukar, a physician and medical correspondent with an expertise in the science of stress, resilience, mental health, and burnout.
We're here to peel back the layers around why it's so easy for society to guard men's time as if it's diamonds and to treat women's time as if it's infinite, like sand. And whether you are partnered with or without children or in a career where you want more boundaries, this is the place for you, for all family structures. We're here to take a time out to learn, get inspired, and most importantly, reclaim our time. Hi, Aditi.
Hi, Eve.
I'm feeling a little nostalgic today because this is the end of our first season. And this has been such a fun and a really interesting ride with who we've been able to talk with. So as I was thinking about the end of the season, I really wanted us to address this idea of legacy, what we're remembered for. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's not always the things that we spend our time on. That's why we're here in the Time Out podcast, right? To scrutinize and encourage people to make active decisions about how they spend their time. So the story I wanted to tell you today has to do with my day job, which I don't talk about that often on this podcast. But for over 10 years, as you know, I've been a philanthropic advisor. I work with families on their legal matters and their governance related to family businesses, family foundations, families that look like the HBO show Succession, as we've laughed and said, and as we said to our listeners, you should feel bad for me. But one story that really stood out to me was right before the pandemic, one of my clients in the Pacific Northwest called me and said, I was thinking about you today. I was at a funeral. And so I said to my client, well, thanks. It's really nice of you to think of me when you're at a funeral. What made you think of me? And he said, well, I'm at a funeral of a colleague, and my client is a titan of business in the Pacific Northwest. This was another titan of business in the Pacific Northwest. He had passed away. There was a packed church, and my client was there to pay his respects. In the church, something happens where all three of his daughters, the man who passed away, all start to approach the podium where they were going to speak. And they say things that are silly childlike poems. So the first daughter goes up, she recites a poem that's like a Shel Silverstein poem, rhyming and beautiful and funny. And the audience, the mourners start laughing. And then the next daughter comes up and she does the same thing. It's a different poem. And then the third daughter comes up and also reads a really funny, silly, beautiful rhyming poem that, again, sounds like it was published by someone. And then everyone in the audience is very confused, my client tells me. And then all three daughters lean into the microphone and say, those were poems our father wrote for us as the Tooth Fairy.
Oh, wow.
He was our Tooth Fairy. And what my client was reflecting on after leaving the church was that nobody talked about his business career. What people were remembering from that day were his poems. The fact that it was probably strange back then for any man to be the Tooth Fairy. Even now in my data, that usually is done by women in hetero cisgender partnerships. But on top of it, what my client said to me was, I had no idea working with this man for years and years that he was a poet.
Wow.
Such a beautiful, skilled poet. And it got me thinking about how we're remembered. What do we spend our time on and why? And so I would love to hear your thoughts, because we're going to get to hear from our amazing guest, Nora McInerney, who really speaks so deeply about issues of legacy, grief, existence, existential meaning. But I'd love to hear from you about this idea of an act of legacy. I read about it in Find Your Unicorn Space, this idea that we can't control how we're remembered, whether it's this titan of business who will be remembered in that room for his poems and other things. But I do know that we can start to think about our values and how we live our daily lives that will shape how people remember us. And I wanted to know, what are things that you think about in terms of what we can focus on now, what our priorities can be now, as we think about how we will be remembered in the future?
So first, before we talk about this idea of an active legacy, I think back to this Harvard study. It's called the Harvard Happiness Study. And more than money or titles or positions of power or all of the things, you know, many of these men were titans of business, as you say. And yet, when it came down to the end of their life and they reflected back on their life, the greatest marker for happiness was the quality of relationships that these people had over 75 years. So when we think about leaving an active legacy, it's less about the doing and more about the being. There is another really beautiful book that speaks to this, written by a woman named Bronnie Ware, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And she was a palliative care nurse and spent years sitting at the bedside of people as they took their last breath in hospice care. And she asked these people as they were dying, what do you wish for? What do you regret? And everyone said their most common regret was, in quotes, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. It's about living a life with no regret. So when you get to the end of your life, as we all will, hopefully for many of us, we won't have that sense of regret.
Shout out to Ben, my 10-year-old son, who knew we were going to be talking about an active legacy and what makes a successful life. And I was sort of droning on and on about it. And he says to me, well, it's just really one sentence, Mom, if you want to think about what an active legacy is or what a successful life is. And I was like, okay, well, tell me. And he said, well, an active legacy, living a successful life really is living a life you would repeat.
Wow.
It happens in the small moments. It happens when you're sitting at desk at night and start scribbling that poem for your child that ends up going under their pillow. The beauty of these hard questions is that it's really just about making these small moments matter that add up to a life you would repeat. We're so excited to talk about all of this with our guest, Nora McInerney, author of It's Okay to Laugh and No Happy Endings, and also the creator of Terrible Thanks for Asking, the podcast. We'll be speaking to her after the break.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're so thrilled to have Nora McInerney here with us. Nora is the author of the amazing memoirs, It's Okay to Laugh and No Happy Endings, and host of Terrible Thanks for Asking, the podcast. We were hoping you would start by just telling listeners how you got into the work of what you do now, who you are, and about your background.
Hi, Eve. Hello, Aditi.
Hi.
I am an author of several funny books about sad things, and I am a remarried widow raising a blended family here in Phoenix, Arizona. And before all of that, I was just a regular Midwestern gal whose life had unfolded more or less the way that it was supposed to. I'd had a semi-traumatic experience in fourth grade where I got a bowl cut. Other than that, my life was blessedly boring. I did all the right things at the right time. I went to college and then I got a job and I fell in love when I was 27, which in the Midwest was pushing it. I fell in love with this guy and he was 31, older man. Felt very sophisticated. And it was so perfect. It was so annoying, like every love story is, which is, you know, didn't expect it. And there he was. And a year into our relationship, he had a seizure at work. And I met him at the hospital. We really didn't think it was serious. Even when the doctors told us he had a brain tumor, we just thought, well, it can't be cancer. Those are the things that happen to other people. We will be the people who have a nice little benign brain tumor. And this is a story that we tell and we laugh about someday. And we do. We did laugh about that story, but only because it was a very bad brain tumor. He had stage 4 glioblastoma. And we were married a month after it was removed from his head. And his funeral was on our third wedding anniversary. So Aaron and I were together for 4 years. We were married for almost three. We had a son together, Ralph, who is now 9 years old and who is a part of this version of my life. And I have this whole different life, this whole different career that I never could have imagined because I had no imagination and I could not have perceived of a life other than the one that I hoped for and had anticipated having, which is that you do the right things and then the right things happen to you. And instead, I have a very different, very beautiful life that I love. And I have a very different career that I love, but that I never, ever would have chosen.
Imagination's an interesting word to me, Nora, because it ties to this idea of a legacy, an active legacy, right? This idea that instead of just looking behind saying the best days are behind us, I would say that I would challenge us all to have imagination, to say, what does it actually mean to live an active legacy? And so the question I wanted to ask you, Nora, is why does it sometimes take an extraordinarily terrible experience for people to wake up, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's the death of a spouse? Aditi, you've said that it's been a cancer diagnosis for many of your patients. Why do we have to wait for something terrible to happen to us, for us to wake up to say we are living on a treadmill that has been decided by somebody else, not us, and I want to live my life by what is important to me?
I'm so interested, Aditi, in your take on this because we talk a lot about mindfulness as a practice. Like, I'm going to turn on this app and be mindful for 10 minutes. You know, and I did it. I did my mindfulness and I've certainly treated it like that. But I think one of the reasons why the time that I had with Aaron and most of the time that I had with him, he was very sick and life was very hard, but that those hardest days of my life were to date still some of my happiest days, because we were so present and because looking too far into the future meant imagining a future where he might not be there, would most likely not be there. And looking too hard at the past was useless because what was even there? Like, what was there? We knew that there was nothing we could do to have, you know, change the outcome. I couldn't have, you know, gone back in time and rearranged the cells in his brain. So we were so, so present with each other. And I do think that when the bottom falls out, what remains is so, so valuable. Even if what remains is not that great, if you could choose it. You know, the fact is, like, we don't get to choose it. And I wish so badly that I could live all of my life, even those previous decades before Aaron was sick, with that same awareness. And I wish I knew how. Honestly, I wish I knew how.
Wow, your story is so powerful. What's so interesting in hearing you and Eve talk about this is this idea that anxiety is a future-focused emotion, right? That was the first thing I thought about, how you talked about being mindful and that, like, truth of the universe is just to be present in the moment. What is mindfulness? And that's what it is. But when we're thinking about the past, there's a lot of regret, maybe feelings of depression and going back. And then we often say that anxiety is a future-focused emotion. What if, what if, what if, what if, rather than being in the now. For many of my patients, when something traumatic happens, it is a great reckoning. And to Eve's question, that original question of why does it take something like that to happen, I often think it's because we are so set in our complacency and it's the only thing that shakes us out of our complacency. And then suddenly, there's that reckoning. And I loved when you talked about that, like, essence, right? You didn't use that word essence, but that kernel of when everything falls apart, what's left? And that feeling of what's left and paring things down is what we've really experienced during the pandemic. You kind of recognize that your time here isn't necessarily guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. That is what keeps us, too. When I talked about imagination before, you can feel bad for anybody, right? And I had a lot of pity, right? I could drive around Minneapolis where I lived at the time and be like, oh, I feel bad for that. Oh, that makes me feel bad. But that's different. That's not compassion and that's not imagination, right? It's just, it's projection. And the reality of compassion and of having a good imagination, a good sense of awareness, is that awareness that what you think sets you apart is actually what makes you a part of the world, of this universe, of your community.
I want to just focus on what you just said about what sets you apart makes you a part. Because I wonder if we could talk a little bit about that. This idea that I've never seen in this, in my research for my second book around creativity and constraints, I've never seen somebody say, when I had, you know, a hard thing happen to me, I have never heard somebody say that it made them not feel less a part of the bigger world, which I thought was so interesting to me. You would think that it would lead to retreat and anger and wanting to never face the world again, but that really wasn't what at least my data saw. And I wonder, again, if you see this in your communities, where this idea of what sets us apart all of a sudden makes us a part of something, yeah. Whether it's your text chain of widows, whether it's the community for women with postpartum anxiety, whether it's so many of my friends who've had cancer diagnoses, part of new different communities, whether it's full of creativity, sharing, imagination, like you said, empathy, mm-hmm. even some surprise. So it makes me hopeful that maybe yeah. if we look at this pandemic and all the individual things that happened to us, could we come out living an active legacy that is connected to that a part of something bigger?
Yeah.
And I wonder if you see that in your community. Do you hear stories like that, Nora, from the people that share with you after you were sharing with them?
Yeah, I lived it too, which is not to say that I didn't also go through just like intense depression and isolation. And also, when I would look back at those moments where I felt like I am totally alone, there's nobody else here, and everything is the worst, I also had so much community in so many ways. Aaron and I wrote his obituary together. We put it in the local paper. I didn't think they would publish it, but this is a fact for everybody who's listening. They will publish anything. You pay for it. It's an ad for your death. You can so live it up. And we revealed his identity as Spider-Man, and it went 2014 viral, which was a different, simpler time, okay? It was a simpler time, and I got so many messages. This is how I started Terrible Thanks for Asking. Most of our episodes are stories that came to me where people are reaching out and sharing something with me. These were complete strangers from around the world who did not know me, who did not know Aaron, who were like, I'm here with you. I know loss and I know how disorienting it is. And they were offering me something, and they would share their own loss with me with detail that they may never have given their friends or family members, in part because there is that recognition, you might be a safe place for me to put this. You just might be. And I've tried so hard to make sure that I am that safe place for other people. And David Kessler, he worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross on The Five Stages of Grief. He wrote a recent book called Finding Meaning, which is the sixth stage of grief. I have seen this in almost every story that I've encountered as I meet people too, which is that once you go through something, you want to somehow like use it for some good. Right? That you are not the only one. I see that all the time. I think it is the most human reaction that we can have, to say, I want to ease somebody else's suffering in a way that mine was or was not.
I love that.
It's like that idea, there are cracks in everything. That's how the light gets in, right? And there's this concept of a therapeutic presence, meaning it's when you're with someone and their presence feels healing. That idea of a therapeutic presence is very important. It also has been shown recently in new emerging studies that it has an actual role to play in healing. And even I in the past have talked a lot about the difference between healing and cure, and how someone may never be cured because it might be an incurable disease, but they can be healed. The thing about this group effect, which is so fascinating, Nora, it's what you're saying, this idea that when we have a lived experience, a tragedy, something that really defines and shapes us and shapes our story forever, it's like there's that clear delineation before and after, right? Like that one incident. As human beings, we are meaning-seeking, purpose-driven creatures. We need to make meaning and sense out of difficult experiences. It's just an evolutionary trait that we have. And so when we go through something difficult, and like you said, Nora, at the start, you felt alone and isolated, and then you put out that obituary, and all of these people started reaching out to you, it helped to normalize and validate the experience, which somehow helped you feel less alone, more connected, and a greater sense of therapeutic presence all around you. You were also able to give that therapeutic presence to others. And that's that group effect. It is a true scientific and measurable effect. And you've all done something different as a result of this event. That's also important to say. You found meaning and purpose and created a whole career as someone who offers their therapeutic presence to others.
Thank you. And all I wanted to do was to make sure that people knew that they were not the only one, and to validate the fact that life is hard for everybody in different ways. And that is all we want as people, is to feel seen and heard. And if you don't, try to make somebody else feel that way. And it will hopefully at some point, like, reflect back to you. It will come back to you. When you talk about living an active legacy, Eve, it's like what you do is you reflect back to people the things that you didn't have, right, in the moment. And you are also showing people what is possible.
I was reading something yesterday about, you know, the privilege of vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. This idea that a lot of times it's hard to be vulnerable if you aren't in a place of privilege where you may not feel like you have that supportive community or even a supportive job. So there is a privilege in vulnerability. But, you know, when you use those redemptive experiences of vulnerability, I wonder, by doing something with it, if that's part of an active legacy, other people may not have that ability to use their voice for that type of vulnerability. And how can I create that community or a world where everybody is entitled to that type of imagination, surprise, compassion?
Yeah.
You know, this first season has been about understanding that time is not infinite, that time is diamonds, that we get one life. It may be interrupted abruptly, or as you said, if we're lucky, we get more time on this earth, but it's just one life. And this episode, we wanted to end the season on it because we believe this idea of an active legacy is living on this earth with intention, which is the exact opposite of what you said when we started, which was this idea of living life without really thinking about the decisions we're necessarily making, living on a treadmill.
Autopilot.
Not paying attention. So for us to understand time, we thought you could help us wrap up the season by this recognition that maybe all of us won't have a wake-up moment, a light bulb moment. So what can you say to those people out there who didn't have, you know, an experience like you had, obviously, but do want to learn from what you did? What can they do and put into practice to live a life where time is really looked at the way it should be, as our most valuable currency?
I do think sometimes that realization or that acknowledgement to live constantly with the sense of a ticking clock is also not healthy, right? If every day you wake up and think this could be it.
Correct.
Like that is no way to live. That is no way to live. But there was this Mason Jennings song that I listened to over and over when Aaron was first diagnosed, called Be Here Now. And those are basically the lyrics, right? Like, be here now, no other place will do. And I got the word now tattooed on the inside of my wrist to remind me of the value of the present moment. And that does not mean that we have to love every moment. It does not mean that you have to go YOLO. Our time does not need to be spent in big, splashy ways constantly. the biggest moments are typically going to be the smallest moments. When I am 85 years old, I want to remember the feeling of my youngest child sitting in the mom chair, which is what he calls my body, on the couch. And he holds my arm and he puts my hand across his heart and it covers almost his whole chest. Like, that is everything. And that is such a small, small thing. We have so little control over our legacy, active or not. We do not know how our interactions, how our investments in time or money will pay off. We don't know. Those seeds will be sown long after we are gone in so many ways. And what I remember about Aaron is I don't want to remember just that he died or the fact that he died. Like, what I remember is that he spent an entire year memorizing all of his friends' middle names and birthdays, because he said to be a good friend, you had to know somebody's middle name and their birthday. That is living in active legacy, is being so present as possible with the people you love, with the things that are important to you. And I know that we don't always have control over that, but if you do, even for a minute, that's worthwhile too.
In mindfulness circles, we talk a lot about that idea of the timelessness of the present moment. And a mindfulness teacher once said to me, look around. All of these intense stories that people are sharing, recognize that every single person that you meet on the street lives with that same intensity in their lives that you do. Very simple statement. It rocked me. Shocked me. I had never thought about that. We all go through life thinking we're leading this intense experience, which we are, but so is everyone else. And your story of this traumatic event, which ultimately led to a beautiful unfolding of you as you're really recognizing your true self, it seems to me, but you had to go through that really intense experience. And because you went through that intensity, you were able to connect with others who've been through that same intensity. And so you exude empathy to me. And I can't thank you enough for your vulnerability and your sharing and your perspective.
Thank you, guys.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hi, it's me, Eve. I wrote Find Your Unicorn Space as a permission slip for you to reconnect and discover that thing that makes you come alive. Without the guilt, without the excuses. Especially in our all-too-busy world, making time for ourselves is essential work. It improves our health, our relationships, and it just might be the antidote to burnout. Join me on a journey to find your unicorn space. Visit unicornspace.com. Didi, I can't believe that we're at our last episode of the season.
Unbelievable.
I know. I'm pretty reflective, just given how much knowledge I feel like we got to glean from our really amazing variety of guests.
It's definitely been a journey.
So part of that journey, I think, is really this idea of how do we want to commit to continuing
this journey, this active legacy. What sets you apart makes you apart. So as we think about what sets you apart and what makes you apart, it's great to have a map. And we like to call that the creativity commitment. It's a way forward. It definitely focuses on what sets you apart, but it also ends on what makes you apart. And so, Aditi, I thought if you would please model this creativity commitment, we can check in on you in season two. But also, our listeners can follow along with us at page 209 of Find Your Unicorn Space. So here it is. My name is
Aditi Narukar.
My motivating values include
joy, helpfulness, and inspiration.
I love it. Today and moving forward, I give myself permission to live by my values. I allow my values to inform my day-to-day curiosities, some of which are
public health, mental health, stress, resilience, bettering the world through my knowledge, wanting to connect with other people.
I am committed to explore deeper and pursue activities and interests that are in alignment with my values, which you just said. I plan to take my open pursuit as far as, this one is think a big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal.
You know, at the start of the pandemic, I was a doctor seeing patients talking about stress management. It was a stressful time because modern life is stressful. The pandemic happened and it turned everything on its head. Prior to seeing patients and being a doctor, I worked in global public health in Geneva with the WHO Collaborating Center on refugee health, HIV and AIDS. I never thought that infectious disease and that whole world would ever align or combine with my work in stress management. And here we are, the pandemic. So in thinking about how I want to serve the world and be bigger and have a bigger impact, but also more aligned with my values, it would be when you ask me that question, I would say, I want to go all the way. Whatever that may be in terms of helping with health communication for public health, COVID, mental health, refugee health, stress, resilience, all of it, because we are living in an unprecedented time. And like you have always said, I love when you say that you met the moment with fair play, and I am ready to meet the moment with my expertise now.
Wow, I love that so much, because when anybody thinks about stress, resilience, burnout, and its implication on the physical body or the brain, I want them to think Dr. Aditi Narukar. So that's our hairy, audacious, authentic goal for you. My first actionable small step forward toward leveling up and reaching my goal is
committing to fostering my communication practice every single day, whether that means writing a few pages in my upcoming book or doing a TV interview, something every day that moves the needle for me.
I love that so much. A communication practice. I mean, you're a woman after my own heart, as you know. My date for completing, well, you just said the date is every day, so I'm going to let you get off on that one. My type of share that most resonates with me is, and what I mean by that is why? When you think about why you share yourself with the world, what are some of the motivations for why you want to share yourself with the world?
I've never been motivated by money or fame. What I have always been motivated by is connection. I went into medicine for the power of the human story. I love that moment in clinic when you explain something complex to a patient and they have that light bulb aha moment. I love that same thing when people respond, whether through email or DMs, saying, you explained something or you had some insight on mental health or public health. It's those aha moments that I live for. I love them because it tells me that people are thinking differently. And that is so meaningful.
Connection. You're sharing to connect and to pass on what you know in very complicated ways. And the community I intend to connect with, speaking of connection, along my journey is. And what I mean by that is who are your spiritual friends? Who keeps you going towards this big vision of what Dr. Aditi Nurekar Media World Domination LLC becomes?
I think women like you, Eve, and other women, like so many of the guests that we've had this season, people who are standing in their power, living their truth, and owning their authentic selves. What's been fascinating about this conversation with Nora, Eve, is that she has committed to this creative pursuit, a life of impact. She didn't go to some mountaintop or some fancy spa and a retreat and then have these aha moments. Life handed her a deck of cards and she played them the best that she could. And I think for all of us, whether we've had a traumatic experience like Nora or otherwise, we have the hand that life dealt us and we have to play it to the best of our ability. That to me is a true commitment that we all should actively pursue as our active legacy.
I love that so much, Aditi, because at the end of the day, this commitment to live creatively does not mean that you're going to be living in a studio with no rain on you and perfect birds chirping outside and the most beautiful canvas in front of you. That's just not the way life works. But creativity is taking those values. It's taking your experiences. And what you say to yourself is that I'm going to live that active legacy by living those values, by moving forward in those values in really big ways, possibly, but also by taking really, really small steps. And everybody out there, you know, this is not an easy exercise. We build to it over 200 pages and Find Your Unicorn Space, but it's an important one because this is a vision board. This is a commitment. This is a way forward and a journey. This is how we can think about what sets us apart, but also what makes us apart. And being intentional in this part of our lives is an investment that we can't afford not to make at this stage after the biggest disruption of our global lives. We have to commit to making these changes and being a part to become a part. So in our last time out of the season, what we want you to do is make a creativity commitment. You can find it on page 209 of Find Your Unicorn Space or at fairplaylife.com. We'll be back next season to dive into more topics like this, and especially unicorn space, finding it, showcasing it, celebrating it, dancing in the rain together. Thank you all for listening to this first season. Please share the show with your friends. Tell us what you liked, what you learned, what you want to hear next, who you'd like for us to feature as a guest. And we'll be back soon. Thank you for listening to Time Out, a production of iHeart Podcasts and Hello Sunshine. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space. Follow me on social media at Eve Rodsky and learn more about our work at Fair Play Life.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Nurekar, a Harvard physician with a specialty in stress, resilience, burnout, and mental health. Follow me on social media at Dr. Aditi Nurekar and find out more about my work at draditi.com. That's draditi.com.
Our Hello Sunshine team is Amanda Farrand, Erin Stover, and Jennifer Yonker. Our iHeart Media team is Ali Perry, Jennifer Bassett, and Jessica Kreinschich. We hope you all love taking a much-needed time out with us today. Listen and subscribe to Time Out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.